Canticle 1. John Kurtz, the chief of the Boston police, breathed in some of his heft for a better fit between the two chambermaids. On one side, the Irish woman who had discovered the body was blubbering and wailing prayers unfamiliar, because they were Catholic, and unintelligible, because she was blubbering, that prickled the hair in Kurtz's ear. On the other side was her soundless and despairing niece. The parlor had a wide arrangement of chairs and couches, but the women had squeezed in next to the guest as they waited. He had to concentrate on not spilling any of his tea. The black haircloth divan was rattling so hard with their shock. Kurtz had faced other murders as chief of police. Not enough to make it routine, though, usually one a year or two. Often, Boston would pass through a 12-month period without a homicide worth noticing. Those few who were murdered were of the low sort. So it had not been a necessary part of Kurtz's position to console. He was a man too impatient with emotion to have excelled at it anyway. This was the only name Chief Kurtz could bear to attach to the horrifying situation that was to change the life of a city. Was not only a murder. This was the murder of a Boston Brahmin, a member of the aristocratic, Harvard-schooled, Unitarian-blessed drawing-room caste of New England. And the victim was more than that. He was the highest official of the Massachusetts courts. This had not only killed a man, as sometimes murders do almost mercifully, but had obliterated him entirely. The woman they were anticipating in the best parlor of White Oaks had boarded the first train she could in Providence after receiving the telegram. The train's first-class cars lumbered forward with irresponsible leisure, but now that journey, like everything that had come before, seemed part of an unrecognizable oblivion. She had made a wager with herself and with God that if her family minister had not yet arrived at her house by the time she got there, the telegram's message had been mistaken. It didn't quite make sense, this half-articulated wager of hers, but she had to invent something to believe, something to keep from fainting dead away. Edna Healy, balanced on the threshold of terror and loss, stared at nothing. Entering her parlor, she saw only the absence of her minister and fluttered with unreasoning victory.